Welcome to the Israel Daily News Podcast. I'm your host, Shanna Fold, and I'm here to get you caught up quickly. I've got some top news stories for you today from Israel, and guess what? You're listening, so you're already on top of your game. Survive and thrive, people. Knowledge is the best weapon. Today is Monday, July 27th, 2026 in the Gregorian calendar, and the 13th of Av, 5786 in the Hebrew calendar. Now, let's get to the news. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is on his way to Washington, D.C. currently, following an invitation from U.S. President Donald Trump. The two leaders are set to meet on Tuesday. They are going to talk about Iran-U.S. relations. Netanyahu is also going to be attending the state funeral of U.S. Senator Lindsey Graham in Washington, D.C. Graham, a staunch supporter of Israel and the U.S.-Israel relationship, died on July 11th from a blocked aorta after returning home from a work trip to Ukraine. He had just turned 71 2 days prior. While Graham's D.C. funeral is closed to the public, it will be broadcast live stream, and the public is allowed to pay their respects during the procession to his final resting place in his home state of South Carolina. The visit marks Netanyahu's first trip to the United States since war with Iran broke out in February 28th. I was right here in Israel when it happened. It was long. It was tough. There was a lot of running up and down the stairs, a lot of running into the miklat, the safe room. Regarding Iran, everyone here in Israel has been waiting for a potential attack from Iran following 13 days of the U.S. striking Iran heavily. President Trump announced a pause for diplomacy over the weekend, but still, the American embassy here has been warning that their citizens should be bracing for potential flight cancellations and rescheduling. So it's a little unclear of what is going to happen next. Washington has been targeting military infrastructure inside of Iran, which Iran retaliated by hitting American targets across the Gulf. President Donald Trump is warning that any attack on commercial vessels or energy infrastructure will trigger an even stronger response from the United States military. The intensifying conflict has caused growing concerns over the global oil supply, with the Strait of Hormuz now under a big threat. Diplomatic efforts to de-escalate the fighting failed, and that's why that fighting resumed just about 2 weeks ago. But it seems that talks are happening again, and many people I know are happy to not see an attack come. A lot of people are worried about their travel. They're trying to fly into Israel. They're trying to fly out of Israel. Some people are working, and it's the height of summer vacation. So it's yet to be seen what's going to happen here. The United States announced that it signed a civilian nuclear cooperation agreement with Saudi Arabia. This deal might eventually allow Saudi Arabia to enrich uranium under a U.S. supervised framework, and it also lays the groundwork for years of nuclear cooperation. Supporters of this agreement argue that it strengthens U.S. influence in the Gulf and will prevent Saudi Arabia from turning to Russia or China for their nuclear technology. Critics of the deal, which Israel is a big critic of this deal, says that the nuclear proliferation standards within the deal are weak, and that they're much weaker than those in past U.S. agreements with other nations. And many are worried that this deal will give Iran ideas about how to negotiate their investigations. When I say investigations, I'm talking about the nuclear oversight that happens. When you have a nuclear program, you are supposed to be supervised. And the supervisions are just really weak, if present at all, in this agreement. That's what we are understanding. An issue that I read today in the New York Times is actually that the United States, that this is some good historical perspective, the United States was actually instrumental in setting Iran up with the foundation for their nuclear capabilities back when the Shah was in power before 1979. And then the revolution happened. And that was totally unpredictable. No one could have known that that was going to happen. At that point, the power for this nuclear responsibility was in somewhat trusting hands, according to American officials at the time, who were happy to work with the Shah. And then that infrastructure was still there, and it was taken over by the IRGC, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps. And it went into very dangerous hands. That very well could happen with Saudi Arabia if anything were to change with their current leadership, which has cozied up to America only in recent times. You have to remember, I mean, the relationship has recently gotten strong, but it hasn't been like that prior. This new agreement is now headed to Congress for a review, where it's expected to spark a heated debate. On Wednesday, New York City Mayor Zohran Mamdani admitted he does not have authority to arrest Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. In a video that opened with the line, "Benjamin Netanyahu is a war criminal."
Benjamin Netanyahu is a war criminal, the architect of a horrific genocide.
Mamdani, who's been a vocal Netanyahu critic, accused Netanyahu of being responsible for war crimes, among many other things, in the IDF's ongoing military campaign in Gaza. He accused Netanyahu of genocide. And Mamdani stated that he reviewed every avenue available, but acknowledged that only the federal government has the authority to execute an arrest. Now, why did he have to make a video about this? Because part of his campaigning was that he campaigned that if Netanyahu came to New York, which he often does for the General Assembly, the UN General Assembly, which takes place in New York, that he would arrest him. And this was sort of got the people going. A lot of people were really enthusiastic about this. Well, Israel's ambassador to the United Nations, Danny Danone, called Mamdani's statement a blood libel. And ahead of Netanyahu's visit to the United States, President Trump said Netanyahu will not be arrested in any way, shape, or form while in the United States of America. Anyone can criticize Prime Minister Netanyahu. That is entirely fair. And I shared a lot of my feelings in the newsletter that went out last night, which was Sunday night, which is where I have a format, letter from the editor, where sometimes I do really get personal and share my thoughts on current affairs or what I'm going through in my writing process. But I'm disturbed that Mayor Mamdani devoted an entire video to condemning Israel's leader without urging New Yorkers to separate him from the American Jewish community living amongst them, and without offering condemnation of other world leaders in that video, or what about making a video about those world leaders who have far worse human rights records? For example, the Iranian regime. And Israel is not committing a genocide. The purpose of a genocide is to wipe a people off the face of the map. Why then do so many Palestinians live in East Jerusalem? So many Palestinians live in the West Bank? So many Palestinians living in Gaza? The imbalance, combined with reports that his administration tried to arrange a meeting with Iran's UN ambassador during an active US-Iran war, is extremely inappropriate. Okay, I'm going to repeat that. The Iranian UN ambassador reached out to the city of New York's international affairs coordinator and requested a meeting. Okay, and they were going to move forward with it, but the US State Department caught wind of it and canceled it. Now, this is during the time of an active war that the United States is having with that regime. Just a day later, there was an anti-Semitic attack on a Jewish New Yorker who was stabbed in the side of his chest with a screwdriver while the attacker shouted, "Allahu Akbar," God is great, in Arabic. He was actually packing up to leave New York City to move to Florida because he was afraid of anti-Semitism and felt that the anti-Semitism was getting so strong that he wanted to leave. No sooner did he get attacked in his own neighborhood, a very Jewish neighborhood. Another person was attacked in the Upper West Side that day as well, an Asian person. This is very concerning. And I just felt that I needed to address that as a person who was born and raised in New York City, who is an Israeli journalist, who's watching all of this as an observer. I think that this story is extremely important and it's not to be passed over. Karim Khan, the chief prosecutor of the International Criminal Court, who ordered the arrest warrant of Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu and accused Israel of war crimes, was formally dismissed from his position on Friday following a 20-month disciplinary investigation. The Assembly of States parties voted 82 to 13 with 15 abstentions to remove Khan, and they concluded that he had committed, quote, serious misconduct and a serious breach of duty, end quote. The removal stemmed from a long pattern of sexual harassment, a slew of allegations of non-consensual and coercive sexual behavior, and an improper relationship between Khan and a junior female staffer. The ICC, the International Criminal Court, says Khan's removal will not impact active arrest warrants, including the one issued in 2024 for Netanyahu and former Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant, and for Russian President Vladimir Putin in 2023. The Assembly of States parties will begin the selection and election process for a new chief, expected to happen and be finished by next year. Israel is not a member of the International Criminal Court, and neither is the United States of America. I was told by trusted source Hillel Neuer, the executive director of UN Watch, that the International Criminal Court is really meant to give justice to countries that don't have a functioning judiciary system. And Israel has a court system that is really recognized as a place that peoples of all backgrounds can get justice in Israel. And therefore, they don't really need to be subscribed to the International Criminal Court. On Friday, a terrorist attack at the Gilad Farm, or Havat Gilad in Hebrew, southwest of the Palestinian city of Nablus, claimed the lives of two Israeli soldiers and four Palestinians from the same family. The attack broke out after a group of young Israeli hikers arrived near the village of Tel and clashed with Palestinians near their village mosque. The security officer of the Havat Gilad settlement rushed in to help, and the group of Palestinians allegedly stole his gun, and the IDF were receiving reports of a shooting casualty. This was all happening at the same time. The mosque was then set on fire and graffitied. The Israeli victims are 27-year-old Major Yuval Ezra and 32-year-old Master Sergeant Reservist Mellet. Prime Minister Netanyahu ordered an immediate crackdown, deploying extra troops, setting up new checkpoints, and initiating wide-scale counter-terrorism operations. 70 Palestinians were arrested. On Saturday, after Shabbat, a man was injured in a stone-throwing attack in the West Bank. The latest string of violence coincides with two terrorist attacks that happened on Thursday, one where a 51-year-old man named Itamar Cohen was seriously injured, and another near the settlement of Ganin in the Menashe region, where a man was stabbed in his hand and taken to the hospital in light condition. Now, the Havat Gilad story is a pretty involved story that's getting some international attention. I received a lot of notes from listeners of the Israel Daily News about it, and I spent a long time writing this story today and a long time on today's script because I made several phone calls to a bunch of contacts of mine throughout the region. One to a Christian journalist and community organizer, an activist for the Judea and Samaria region, the Samaria Regional Council head, which I asked for them to give me a statement, and the head of the Havat Gilad community who serves as their spokesperson. Now, there's a few things going on in this story. One is that all the recent reporting is leaving out very important information. I don't know why, but there's really big points that are not in the press from the last 2 days. Police arrested two Palestinians who are thought to have set fires rippling through the settlement of Havat Gilad, damaging 15 homes, forcing evacuation, and later spreading toward Kedumim, where two firefighters were injured. This happened the weekend prior. So this isn't a story from this weekend. This is a story springing from 2 weekends ago. But it's not being reported along with this story because this story is being framed as a group of young teenagers who went out for a hike with private security in Area B of the West Bank, or Judea and Samaria, however you call it, and a clash happened. And then the soldiers had to step in, and when they came to break things up, they were killed. And then the mosque was set on fire by these young teenagers, or it's not even clear who set this mosque on fire. Those two suspects from the weekend prior have been taken in for questioning with police, and the police are deciding whether to extend their detention for setting fires, or what they believe that they set fires in Havat Gilad, not this past weekend, but the weekend before. Now, let's fast forward to the events of this past weekend where the teens were out for a hike and ended up clashing with Palestinians and then having two soldiers killed during the clashes. After this, the mosque was set on fire and graffitied. Here's what the Samaria Regional Council replied when we reached out to ask about it. They said, "Judea and Samaria is not a secondary arena. It is a central front of the State of Israel, and the policy here must change accordingly by launching a broad operation against the centers of terror, exacting a heavy price from anyone involved in terrorism or incitement, and stopping treating these attacks as routine." This comes from the Mate Benyamin Regional Council head, Israel Gantz. Now, Ishai Fleischer, international spokesperson for the Jewish community of Hebron, whom I reached out to because Hebron is a major player in the region for Jews, and he speaks to the press all the time. He's quite right-wing. He tells the Israel Daily News this: "The lesson is these guys are here and they mean business. They're trying to undermine our people, our security, and our narrative. They endanger the lives of our citizens. They want us to stop walking in the land of Israel, and there's only one simple answer: push them back." Samaria Regional Council head Yossi Dagan spoke about Master Sergeant Reservist Melet, who we noted lost his life, and he called him, quote, "a hero who fought to save the lives during the arson attack on Shabbat." And again, Sergeant Melet, his name is Benyehu, is survived by his wife Esther and their two daughters who are 12 and 13 years old. Some listeners of the Israel Daily News asked me if I could find out if that group of teenagers went out for a hike in an effort to antagonize Palestinians. Now, I'm not sure we're ever going to know for sure. I asked many people living nearby, and all of them said that these young men were simply out for a walk, albeit they went with private security detail, because that is what is necessary in that neck of the woods. Joshua Waller, the executive director of Hayovel, a Christian organization that brings international volunteers to support Jewish farmers in that region, lives right down the road. I called him, and he said that while some people see Area B in the West Bank as being land that the teens were trespassing in, it's actually a gray area. It's not really trespassing. It's not trespassing. And he said this: "Trespassing should not be penalized with death." We did our own research. Area B under the Oslo Accords splits control between the Palestinian Civil Authority and Israeli security oversight. So Israelis, including Jews, are not legally barred from entering or passing through the way that they are through Area A, but they're not meant to live there, and Israeli settlements are supposed to be confined to Area C, which is where Havat Gilad is located. Havat Gilad is close to B, but technically in C, and it was retroactively recognized by the Israeli government in 2018. Havat Gilad is known to have been purchased by Jews privately from individual Palestinians about 50 years ago. That was the dive that I spent many hours working on for you about this story. I really felt that the reporting was not clear. So I spent a lot of time on this story today, and I hope that I answered some questions for you about that. Zahava Shaul, Shaul in English, the mother of fallen soldier Aron Shaul, whose remains were held by Hamas for decades, has passed away on Friday at the age of 71 after a battle with a serious illness. But she survived to see the remains of her son come home from Gaza. Aron Shaul fell in Operation Protective Edge on July 20th, 2014, when the armored personnel carrier he and six other soldiers were riding in was struck by a Hornet anti-tank missile fired by Hamas in the Shajaya neighborhood of Gaza City. Every soldier inside was killed. Oren's remains were held for more than a decade by Hamas, and Zahava never stopped fighting for his remains and a proper burial. A fight that only got stronger after the attacks of October 7th, 2023, because negotiations were underway. So Oren Shaul was included in the hostages and hostage bodies that this big sweeping deal brought home. That decades-long wish came true on January 19th, 2025, when soldiers carried out a secret operation overnight in northern Gaza and rescued Shaul's remains, or Oren Shaul's remains. I did a lot of reporting on this at the time. He was laid to rest the next day. Zahava Shaul will be laid to rest in Poria Elit near the Sea of the Galilee in northern Israel. Besides Oren and her already deceased husband, Herzl, who died in 2016, 2 years after his son's death and capture. At least his mother, who fought tooth and nail for her son's body to come home, at least she lived to see his body return for proper burial in Israel. The Israel Daily News now has its own direct donation platform after losing dozens of supporters last year during Spotify's takeover of our distribution site. Listeners can now contribute monthly or make one-time donations directly through the website. Support helps keep our independent journalism alive and growing. You can also follow us at Israel Daily News across our social media platforms on Instagram, TikTok, X, and LinkedIn at israeldaily.news or Israel Podcast on X. Now, I always try to end off our shows with something positive, so let's end with this. A four-year-old boy named Yuval Kogan was found alive on Friday afternoon after going missing on Thursday from a beach in Ashkelon in the south of Israel. He'd been on a picnic in the area with his two sisters and father, and he went missing while his father was tending to the girls. He was found after a 27-hour search operation by volunteers who came by foot and by horse in what became a massive effort, getting hundreds of police officers and volunteers who searched overnight and throughout the day by land, air, and sea. One of the volunteers had just about given up, and as he was leaving, he made a wrong turn. He walked in the wrong direction. And that's when he found this little boy. Little Kogan was found awake, but slightly dehydrated. He's in stable condition now. The country was very unified and happy to enter Shabbat with the news. We are so happy that Yuval Kogan is back with the rest of the Kogan crew, and that Israel can rest assured that there is a four-year-old who's here with us in Israel. There were concerns that he was abducted into Gaza because Ashkelon is close to that border. He is back with his family. All right. Well, that is it for today's show. Today is Monday, July 27th, 2026. Tel Aviv has a low of 26 degrees Celsius and a high of 30 degrees. That's 77 degrees Fahrenheit for the low, going up to 86 degrees for the high. We are everywhere. Don't forget to sign up to our Israel Weekly News Wrap. The Israel Weekly News Wrap is a newsletter with the top five stories coming out of Israel from throughout the week. And of course, you can sign up for that at israeldailynews.org. Scroll down to the bottom, drop your email address in, and you'll be on our list for the newsletter. A big thank you goes out to our incredible sponsor, Marianne Vollinger, our writer, Perry Schwartz, our interns who are finished for the summer, and our associate producer, Lori May. Have a great and productive day and an excellent week. Shavua Tov, everyone.